What makes a good life? So those in the world would say maybe success makes a good life. People who've got a lot of stuff, maybe you got a lot of wealth, the big house, the nice car. But what's the problem with that? Does that satisfy? I think when we look at the people today that have that kind of stuff, on the surface they may look like they're satisfied, but in the end, they always want more. And I think that in itself tells us that that's not enough to satisfy. Well, we may say, well, I don't necessarily need all of the stuff. I just want to be able to live a life where I just don't need anything else. I can just live like in a cabin in the woods, and that'll be great for me. And that sounds pretty luxurious. I like, you know, the outdoors and things, so a cabin in the woods sounds pretty good. But there are people that do that, and that doesn't satisfy them either. The big thing today is maybe a full life, a life full of adventure. You know, I mean, I have a lot of experiences, and that's really popular today. If you look at social media is covered up with people that are living that life. But are they satisfied? You know, we have a very, very high rate of depression and suicide, and when you even talk to those people that on the surface, they look like they've got it all. They are living the dream life. You find out that they're not actually, at least in their eyes, living the dream life. Many of them are lonely. Many of them are not satisfied with what they're doing. So we have to ask ourselves, why is that the case? Why is it that we see people that seem to have it all, they have what they would themselves say is having a good life, it's not enough? Let me ask you this question. Have you ever wanted something and then you didn't get what you wanted? You may have wanted, it may have been something good. You prayed for it and instead God gave you something else. And then you found out later that what God actually gave you instead was way better than what you thought you wanted. Has that ever happened to you? That happens to me all the time. You know, when I was growing up, when I was in high school, I wanted to be an aerospace engineer. I even knew who I wanted to work for. I wanted to work for Lockheed Martin designing airplanes. And I went to school and I was getting a degree in aerospace engineering, and then came my history professor. And my history professor somehow instilled a love of education that I did not know that I had and inspired me to, instead of becoming an aerospace engineer, become a teacher. But I had always wanted to be an engineer, so I decided, you know what, I'm still going to finish this degree. And so I did. I finished my aerospace engineering degree and then went on to get a certificate to teach with the idea that this is what I would do. I would do engineering for a few years, and then I would go and I would teach math at the high school level. Well, that's not what happened. I had very little luck even getting an interview for aerospace engineering, but because of my aerospace engineering degree, everybody wanted me to be their teacher, which having a degree in engineering does not mean you're going to be a good teacher. Just want to put that out there. So I decided, well, you know what I'll do? I'll take a job teaching engineering, and I'll just keep myself sharp. That way, after a year, I'll be able to try again. And so I took the job over there in Athens at the Career Tech Center and absolutely fell in love with it. It was the best thing that I could have, you know, asked for. I got to be a teacher and work with some really kind of quirky but fun students, but at the same time get to do the engineering stuff that I wanted to do. It was the best thing I could have possibly imagined. But it wasn't what I was originally looking for. Has that kind of thing ever happened to you? You think you want your life to go in one direction, but instead it goes another direction, and it's better? So when that happens to us, you know, and putting that together with, you know, what happens to these people, we have to ask ourselves this question. Do we really know what would make us happy? What do we know about what we really want? You know, because I thought I wanted this, but I found out what I really wanted was something else. So we have to ask ourselves, what do we know about what would actually make us happy? Let's turn to Matthew chapter 6. In Matthew chapter 6 and verse 25, Jesus starts to tell the disciples there that are with him on the Sermon on the Mount that he's going to take care of us. All the things that we need, he will provide for us. This is a passage many of us are pretty familiar with. But what I want us to do is I want us to look at verses 31 through 33. He says, "Do not worry then, saying, 'What will we eat, what will we drink, or what will we wear for clothing?' For the Gentiles eagerly seek all these things, for your heavenly Father knows that you need all these things. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you." Notice verse 33. Verse 31 is what the world is seeking, right? What they're going to eat, drink, and put on. But he says, looking at verse 33, "But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you." This is a hard task. Seeking first his kingdom and his righteousness, that's not easy. It's going to require two difficult things of us. One, it's going to require that we know what God's will even is. And has God abandoned us? Has he left us to just guess what his will is? No. God has given us his word. He has given us the scriptures so that we can study that and know what his will is. He's given us the Bible. The other thing, though, that this task requires, seeking first his kingdom, is it requires us to be honest. But it doesn't require us just to be honest with others. More importantly, it requires us to be honest with ourselves. Because when we read this word and we read what his righteousness is, we're going to have to ask ourselves some pretty difficult questions. We're going to have to ask ourselves, you know, what's something that I need to change? And the thing is when you ask yourself that question and you really are honest with yourself, you'll get an answer. You're probably thinking of what that thing is right now. And it's probably the thing you don't want to change. Because you won't like the answer. Because we don't like thinking about the things that we need to work on ourselves, and we certainly don't like to change things. But that's what we're going to have to do. When we look at Romans chapter 12, it says, "And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect." So Paul tells us that part of being a Christian is we're going to have to renew our mind. And if we look in another place that Paul tells us in 2 Corinthians 4, verse 16, he says, "Therefore we do not lose heart, but though our inner man is decaying, though our outer man is decaying, yet our inner man is being renewed day by day. For momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory far beyond all comparison." So even though our inner man is being renewed day by day. But notice in verse 17 what he calls that. He says, "Momentary light affliction." When compared to the riches that Jesus offers us, compared to the eternal prize that awaits us, these changes that we have to make, this uncomfortable thing that we're going to have to do, is going to seem like momentary light affliction. It's going to seem like nothing compared to it. And what will it produce? What will be our prize? Here it says, "The eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison." Just before this in 2 Corinthians in chapter 3 and verse 18, he says, "But we all with unveiled face, beholding as in a mirror the glory of the Lord, are being transformed into the same image from glory to glory, just as from the Lord the Spirit." So what we do is we look at what God has given us, we look at Christ, right, the perfect image of who we're supposed to be, and then we look at ourselves and we see what's the difference, what needs to change so that we can be more like Christ. And this may be a thing you have to ask yourself day by day. What's one thing I need to change today? What's one thing that you would change today? And make that change. And when we do that day after day, what's going to happen? we're going to slowly start being transformed into the image of Christ. And if we do this, if you were to do this every single day, what would your life be like? What would your family be like? What would your church be like? If every day you were to evaluate yourself and make just one change. You know, a lot of times we like to think about numbers. You know, how many days are there in a year? You know, how many changes would that be? How many changes would that be in 5 years? Think about what your life would be like. What would your job be like? And when you think about it that way, what it would produce is the adventure of a lifetime. That thing that everybody's chasing, that adventure, is not out there. It's in here. Because there are some difficult things that we're going to have to overcome. And it's not going to be the same for me as it is for you. We're all going to have different struggles and things that we got to work on. But the thing that we're working towards is the same. We're working towards the same goal, to be more and more like Christ. And that's where we can help one another, we can encourage one another. But I can't do it for you, and you can't do it for me. These are questions that we have to ask ourselves. And again, we have to be honest about them. Because if we're not honest about them, if we're not going to be honest with ourselves about what we need to change, are we going to become more and more like Christ? Are we going to just kind of scoot those things under the rug? Let's look back at Matthew chapter 6. In Matthew 6 and verse 34, the very next verse, he says, "So then, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will take care of itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own." You know, I think a lot of times we misunderstand this passage. This passage is not saying that we just lay back and we don't do anything and, you know, God's just going to take care of everything. Kind of the hippie interpretation of this passage. I don't think that's the point that he's making at all. I think when we look at verse 33 about seeking first His kingdom and His righteousness, and then we go in and we look at, don't worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will take care of itself. I think we need to ask the question of this. Do we not have enough that we got to work on today? When you look at yourself, and again, you're honest with yourself, do you not have enough to work on today before you try to worry about something else tomorrow? Now again, I don't think this is saying that you don't plan for the future. Maybe planning for the future is that thing that you need to work on today. But I think the point is this. We have a lot that we got to work on. Instead of worrying about other people and what other people are doing, let's work on fixing ourselves. So, let me then ask this question. So, how do we live this good life? So, this is what we want to do. What are some other practical things that we can do, that the Scriptures tell us that we can do to live a good life? Let's turn over to 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, in verse 9 through 12, Paul is talking to the Thessalonians about their love of the brethren. He says in verse 9, "Now as to the love of the brethren, you have no need for anyone to write to you, for you yourselves are taught by God to love one another. For indeed you do practice it toward all the brethren who are in Macedonia. But we urge you, brethren, to excel still more, and to make it your ambition to lead a quiet life and attend to your own business and work with your hands just as we command you, so you will behave properly towards outsiders and not be in any need." So he's talking to them about loving the brethren and how they're doing a good job with that, but they could do even better. But he gives them three things to do to live this life. We already talked. He says, lead a quiet life. So, I think the idea here is you don't need to be worrying about trying to change the world when your own life is not being managed properly. I won't say in shambles, because to some degree our lives are always in shambles. And that's because we're looking at Christ, and compared to Christ, we're always going to fall short. But there's a difference between your life being in shambles and being completely mismanaged. We need to be about fixing ourselves before we start trying to fix everybody else. And he says, attend to your own business. Again, don't we have enough to work on ourselves? He says, work with your hands. I think the idea here is, don't try to take any shortcuts. I wish I had put some of the proverbs here. There are many proverbs that talk about, don't try to, you know, do these get-rich-quick schemes. You're not trying to take shortcuts. Work with your hands. Do what you're supposed to do, and God's going to take care of the rest. Because if you're doing this, or if you're not doing this, how is this going to affect the way that other people see you? Let's look here in verse 12 for the reason for why you should do this. In verse 12 it says, so that you will behave properly toward outsiders and not be in any need. So if we're not doing this, if we're not leading a quiet life, if we're trying to go and fix everybody else before we fix ourselves, or we're trying to take shortcuts, how is that going to affect the way that other people see us? People that are not Christians. Again, let's say you've got a coworker or a friend who needs help with something, and they see you living like that. Do you really think that they're going to come ask you for help when you're not even taking care of yourself, but you're going and trying to fix everybody else's problems? There's a word for that. It's called being a hypocrite, right? And as we all know, the world hates hypocrites, and that's one of the main reasons that people repel from Christianity. Well, they're all hypocrites anyways. Now again, the idea here is not that we're going to live perfectly. But again, there is a difference between you ignoring your own problems and trying to fix everybody else's versus admitting that you have problems and working on those problems. That's the kind of person that a person that's in need will go to, somebody who's working on themselves and doing what they're supposed to do. And then the last part of this is, and not be in any need. And that goes back to Matthew chapter 6. What was the promise that God made? If you seek first my kingdom and God's righteousness, I'm going to take care of everything else. That's the deal that he makes us. That we work on ourselves, we try to become more like him, and he will take care of the other things that we need to do. And like I said, this is not an easy life. Again, you know, preaching this to the Zimbabweans, this next part was kind of hard. It always got lost in translation. And the way that I think I can phrase it in English and you understand. Have you not found that the hardest or the best things in life are the hardest to get? All the best things that you would want, they're going to require effort. If you want to be a good athlete, it's going to require work. It doesn't just happen. So if that's the case, wouldn't we then expect that the best life that we could live would require everything that we have to offer? And the example that I finally got that I could use for them, and maybe it'll help here too, we had passed by a diamond mine while we were over there. So when you think about the diamond and how precious it is, how much work has to go into getting that little diamond? How much digging and effort has to go in to get that little precious thing? So how precious is a good life? It's very precious. It's what everyone is seeking. But they're seeking it in the wrong ways. What is it going to require? It's going to require you to sacrifice everything you have. But the result will be you will be bettering yourself, becoming more like Christ. Christ is going to take care of the rest of the things that we need or that we can't possibly handle. That's the key to a good life. It's not found in stuff. It's not found in experiences or adventure. It's found in that inner adventure. So that's what I came to tell you. It may have been a little short. I hope it wasn't too short, but these are things that the whole reason that this is, or whole way that this is possible, is because of the gospel. because of the sacrifice of Jesus, that's what he offers us, is a second chance. Without his blood, we're still in our sins. So if you're not a Christian, this isn't a life that's attainable to you right now. This isn't, you don't have that second chance to begin fixing yourself and working on yourself. You're still stuck in your sins. And certainly, if you're looking for this life out in the world, you're not going to find it. And that's the thing. Many people that go out there and they try to live that worldly life and chase after that, they never find it. Because it's only found here. Christ is the only way that we can have that life. So if you're not a Christian, I urge you to become one and start living this good life. If you've gone out into the world and you've chased after these things, start seeking the thing that's going to ultimately provide you the life that's worth living. So if there's anything that we can do for you, won't you please come while we stand and sing?